Good morning, and thanks for listening to the show here on KJZZ 91.5. I'm Steve Goldstein with Lauren Gilger, and now it's time for the Friday newscap and some voices from the news this week.
The president has done an excellent job, and his State of the Union really points out the things that he had promised the American people he was going to do when he campaigned, and he's followed through.
There's still like millions of Americans that aren't making enough money, that aren't making ends meet. While the stock market is good, wages aren't as high, people still can buy houses.
Ms. McSally, not guilty. Ms. Sinema, guilty.
I hear we're doing well in Arizona, huh? It's going good, yeah? I think so. I think I saw a poll that was very good. For me, I think we have to make sure Martha's gonna do good. But we have some states that are gonna be not easy. But Arizona's been great.
And with us to talk about President Trump's impeachment acquittal and whether the polls are good for him but not Martha, are Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting and Julie Earthly of Earthly Uncuffed. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Stan.
Sorry, let's do our final, Julie, sort of post-impeachment analysis. No surprise that the president was acquitted.
No.
There was a lot of talk about which way Senator Sinema would go.
Right.
Ultimately, did you think that was in doubt?
I didn't. But I think I was one of the rare Democrats who didn't believe that that was in doubt. The reality is Sinema still believes in the rule of law. She is, she definitely in her heart wants bipartisanship and to find common ground. But when somebody has obstructed Congress, when somebody has abused their power in office, she's going to vote to convict. She had no other choice. So I wasn't surprised at all.
Stan, what about you?
I was a little surprised, but when I think critically about it, nah. I mean, after all, she is giving more love to the president than any other Democrat in that room. And strategically, a beautiful thing to see her standing up when that whole half of the House is sitting down.
In the State of the Union.
In the State of the Union for some particular point. And I feel like in my heart I'm saying she's applauding the record low unemployment. But she's not applauding the man who's talking about it. I get it. And no other Democrat is intellectually honest enough to do that. But she is, which I love her for. But then she would start a revolution. She'd have a serious primary if she didn't just go with the team against the president on this one. So that's where she had to be.
I think what she's doing, though, to be honest, nobody's doing, period. It's not just Democrats, it's Republicans as well. I mean, you see what happens to people when they do that, especially on the Republican side with Mitt Romney. Oh my goodness, they may throw him completely out of the party because of what he did. So she is really trying to forge this path that is unheard of right now in Congress and in a country that is as divided as it's maybe ever been.
How is that going to play out for her, though? Because like you say, this is, Steve and I were talking about this ahead of time, and I was trying to remember if this used to not be the case, that Democrats would stand up for a line in George Bush's State of the Union or the other way around for Obama. That used to happen. It doesn't anymore. How does this play out for Sinema since she is the one doing that?
Now, I think it's easier for her to keep the left flank at bay in Arizona. So I think it plays out well. Plus, she's only in the second year of that Senate term. And like Mitch McConnell said, it's the cooling saucer to the hot cup. There's plenty of time between now and when she has to go ask voters. I don't even know if they'll think about this moment. But she is wonderfully signaling to the world the point Julie's making, that you can't put her in any particular category, and she's willing to let facts drive the issue, which I give her credit for.
Julie, should Democrats be frustrated with Senator Sinema from the standpoint that a lot of people have said, well, why is she doing some of the things she's doing, considering she's not running for re-election for a number of years? As Stan said, even if she got a challenge from the left flank, it wouldn't be for 4 to 5 years.
I don't think they should be frustrated. In fact, something that I was sharing with Stan earlier was the idea that I think that Sinema's stance is actually very helpful for Mark Kelly. She is showing Arizona voters that you can have a Democrat in office in a state that is trending purple, that is not going to go against, one, what she campaigned for, which is bipartisanship. And I think that that's incredibly helpful for Mark Kelly, because there's going to be less of a fear among moderate Republicans or independents who lean Republican that if they have two Democrats in Congress, that suddenly they'll have this very liberal flank. So I think in many respects, she's actually doing Democrats in Arizona a favor.
Okay, so that's the Mark Kelly, Senator Martha McSally race then. So let's talk about McSally a little bit. No, I don't think a surprise that she voted to acquit the president here. Was there any surprise in her statement and in sort of the way that she couched it?
No, I don't think so. I think she's decided the president makes his own weather, and she's in that weather. She cannot separate herself from Donald Trump. This, she's in the U.S. Senate. This is a time in history. This is a time in her life. She can't say, I wish the president wasn't here. I wish it was George Bush or some other normal Republican. She simply is with it. And so she's making the best out of it. I think in the end it's going to rescue her. I think she's going to beat a very attractive candidate, astronaut, centrist, because the Trump phenomenon will win Arizona and she'll be the beneficiary of that.
Well, of course I disagree. I think it's going to be the complete opposite, that she's doing exactly what lost her the election last time. This state is moderating, and I don't think that record turnout is going to be driven by Trump so much as it's going to be driven by, well, it will be driven by a desire to get rid of Donald Trump. And that is going to be harmful for Martha McSally. So I see the opposite happening with her doubling down on this.
Stan, we heard the clip of President Trump from his interesting event yesterday, talking about Martha McSally. I'm not really sure what to make of that because, again, it always comes back to him where his polls are doing well. And Martha, it's just sort of, what do you make of the fact he dropped her name without really being that encouraging?
Yeah, I think we're getting a stream of consciousness, and sometimes those things come out a little clunky. I was just glad he didn't say, Martha, not so much. You know, it felt like that's what he was going to do, and he caught himself. Yeah. But this is the maddening beauty of Donald Trump. And in fact, I ask any of your listeners to try to detach yourself from whatever you're normally attached to and watch the history playing out with this president. It's breathtaking.
Terrifying.
It's terrifying for some. It's breathtaking for some of us who are enjoying watching it. I think your listeners know, I've said it on the show, I've spent his first 3 years wishing you could dip him in a pool of diplomacy and then drag him out and let him run. But I've just decided to learn to love it, and that's where I am.
Well, I give Bob Robb a lot of plugs on this show. Bob needs to return the favor at some point.
You're the only one that reads that call. You're the only one.
But he brought up the fact that it, in a normal year, with a normal president, and maybe Trump wouldn't have won if he were a normal president or a normal candidate, but because the economy is doing well for a lot of people, not everyone, for a lot of people, he should have an easy reelection bid based on what's happening to some extent in the world. But he's so negative and pretty unlikable that really hurts him. So that gives Democrats a chance, yes?
A lot of things give Democrats a chance. And even, you know, there were some post-analysis of the State of the Union, and there were people who were saying, you know, the economy is doing fairly well. Like, we can't deny that fact. And yet, Trump continued to lie in his State of the Union about facts that can be fact-checked, knowing that, hey, his base doesn't really care whether he lies or not because he lies every single day. So he tried to make it even into something that it wasn't. And because of that, you've got Democrats that are saying, listen, we don't even want to talk to you about the economy because you can't even be straight with the American people about that. So I think the distrust for Donald Trump will drive the turnout for this next election more than anything else.
You know, what's missing every time we do this intellectual round around is, I think, a phenomenon that
we're going to change the name of the Friday newscast. Intellectual round around. Thank you for that, Stan.
What Donald Trump is teaching us is something about the American electorate. And what I'm getting out of it in part is that while many people think Donald Trump lies about things, to Julie's point, I also believe what we've learned is many people think all of Washington is in the same boat. Some are more stylistically nice about it. But the American people have a certain contempt for those who have been running the country. And it is on the left and the right. And so Trump ends up being our liar or the guy that is doing things we like as a monkey wrench in that elite gear. And they acknowledge, I'm thinking abstract normal American. I get that he's not always on point, truthfully, mathematically, factually. But I don't think Obama was. I don't think Bernie is. And so they're all bad. In this case, this guy seems to be the disruptor of those people, which I enjoy. I think that's his net benefit.
This is what you mean by the maddening beauty here?
Yes, that's what I mean.
But I think to go a little bit more toward the maddening part of it, I think what Donald Trump has illustrated when it comes to the electorate is that the way to win is to divide. And we have now so divided into camps that I have a hard time believing that we have this pool of undecideds. I really think what politicians are learning, and this is the very scary, destructive part of all of this, is that if you want to win, you can't be a Kyrsten Sinema. You have to be the one that goes out and says the most outrageous thing, and it's all about your opponent, and it's voting against somebody versus voting for somebody. And I think that is the legacy of Donald Trump.
Stan, can I have you personalize this a little bit? Because I don't want to give everyone your life story, but you are someone who was in the legislature at a young age. You're not someone who, I mean, you're a ranch kid, a farm kid, however we describe it.
Yeah.
And yet you've done very well. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So how do you balance that out? The fact that you're someone who can see it from both sides, frankly, and because Trump offends you on some level.
Yes, he does. And you're really touching me where I live right there, because I'm a guy who makes a fine living and enjoys success in the established political world. And yet I'm loving his disruption of that established political world. I get it. And I don't know how to explain it. But I have a smile on my face. You can see it. Everybody, I love watching this president make liberal heads pop right off their shoulders. I love it. And I also love the way it's, exposed where America is about Washington. And so I've been frustrated with him because I think they put him on Mount Rushmore someday if he had Reagan style, but his same policy. But I know that sounds ridiculous, but I love where he's going. I love what he's doing on the national stage. I love what he's doing on the international stage. I love his courage. When he moved the embassy to Jerusalem and the world was supposed to end and it did not, and every president talked about it but would not, I use that as a perfect example of a guy with courage. And one more thing. We've said all my political life, give me a non-politician. I want someone not a politician in the job. Well, there he is. That's what he looks like. That's what he looks like. What do you want? That's what a non-politician is. And I think us intellectuals will overthink it, because the American people are thinking right out of their midsection gut and not their head when it comes to voting for president.
Let me give you the intellectual question then. What's next? If this leads us, where does this lead us? Where does this disruption bring us? Does it end up bringing us to a better point? Is that what you're hoping?
The end of democracy.
Really, Julie?
Seriously. You have a president right now who has seeded such disunity. But even beyond that disunity, he has done exactly what Putin wanted him to do, which is to sow distrust in government and specifically in democracy. Putin didn't really care so much about Trump. What he cares about is ending democracy. What he cares about is making sure that democracy isn't spread across the world, because that's a threat to Russia and that's a threat to his own power. And so you've got Donald Trump, who calls FBI agents and CIA a bunch of dirty cops. You've got him, responding to the press anytime they don't report his lies, that it's fake news. You have him calling, you have him getting away with so much, right? So even in his State of the Union speech, when he refers to public education as failing government schools, he is seeding distrust in our very institutions, and those institutions are the fabric of our democracy. And at what point do people realize that if he loses in November, he's not going quietly? He already in 2016 claimed that there were millions of people who voted illegally. If people think that he's just going to walk out of office when he loses, they're smoking something.
Wait a minute, Julie. You're giving me the impression that you think, to this extreme, that if the president somehow doesn't win, and we're going to have to go in there with guns and drag him out of the Oval Office. Is that what you're talking about?
I think that it is very likely that it ends up in a court battle.
What?
I think it is very likely. That man is not going quietly.
Okay.
And the thing is, people keep talking about, no, the people around him they will come to terms, right? Give me a break. Are you kidding me? These Republican congressmen and women have made some kind of a blood oath with this guy. Like, you're either in or you are out. You disagree with him, you're out of the party, you're out of favor, you're getting slammed everywhere you go. You are in or out. You are either with Donald Trump or you are no longer a Republican.
But isn't it the left, though, that has spent the last 3 years completely non-accepting of the 2016 election?
No.
That's who you're describing, is Hillary Clinton, who still claims to have won, and the left who has decided to try to impeach him before he even got sworn in.
No, I don't think that they're claiming that he didn't win. She did win the popular vote. What they're claiming is that they hate the Electoral College, which I understand. But the reality is they're not trying to destroy our institutions. You don't see them try. I mean, you're calling the military a bunch of crybabies and dopes? Who says that? Donald Trump says that. That is division, and his entire, you know, congratulatory speech to himself the other day. Division, 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 division.
We need to go to break, guys. I guess we'll see whether politics manifests itself in the ways we usually see it, or if Julie's right. So this is the NewsCap with Stan Barnes, Julie Earfley, Lauren Gilger, and I'm Steve Goldstein. Back after this. Back with the Friday NewsCap here on KJZ. So we've gone to our separate corners, had some water with Lauren Gilger. I'm Steve Goldstein, along with Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting and Julie Earfley of Earfley Uncuffed. Guys, before we get off the national thing, Julie, you referred to Mitt Romney. And Stan, I've done this to you too many times, so forgive me, but you challenged Jeff Flake many years ago in the congressional race.
This is a daily event with you.
And you mentioned the word courage, and you tried it. How do you think, based on how much pressure Senator Romney is getting, how much criticism he's getting, for what seem to be genuine beliefs, how do you think Senator Flake would have handled a similar situation?
I think he would have been that exact same senator.
He would have actually voted that.
I think he would have voted to remove the president.
Okay.
That's what I think. And so, anyway.
Okay. Julie, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Jeff Flake said a lot of things, you know, over social media and so forth, but by and large, he tended to vote with the president. I think that was where he's a little bit different than Romney, and that was where a lot of Democrats sort of distrusted what he was saying, was he seemed to say one thing, vote another way. So I'm not positive how he would have voted on that. Obviously, he's the only one that can say, but I do think that that kind of courage that Romney showed, again, is indicative of what happens in the Trump administration. Anytime somebody who is an established Republican, somebody who has been very conservative, goes against Trump, his first instinct and those around him is to just totally destroy them personally and professionally. He's done that with his own, you know, cabinet members. And supposedly he appoints the best people, and yet they're all leaving. and then they're all the worst people.
Stan, do you get where Romney was coming from in this or no?
No. I think it was, in the end, you're going to boo. I know you're going to boo, Julie. But in the end, I think it was just an outright petty instinct. His reptilian brain kicked in. And he says to himself, I can get away with it because I am who I am in the state of Utah. And I hate that president. And this is my way to leave a mark on him. And I think that's what, in the end, did it for him.
So do you think it's because he thinks he should have been president?
I think there's a whole bunch of deep psychosis going on in that deal. Plus, a little bit of sanctimony, honestly. He thinks he's so much better. And as the memes have come out immediately, if he'd have fought that hard against Obama, maybe he'd have been president instead. So, Julie's got her finger on something, even though she's calling it the wrong color. There is something happening in the United States. And when Trump wins re-election with more states than he won last time, we're going to come back to this radio station. We're going to have the same discussion. And Julie's going to describe for me how screwed up the American people are. Because that's who you're going to blame. Trump is a symptom, a vehicle. Something else is happening. That he would beat Hillary. That he would beat Jeb and Marco and everyone else and just mow down. Why is that happening? We should ask ourselves that question because that's the most interesting thing of all, I think.
Okay. Julie, let's move on to to state stories. Legislative ethics, another fun discussion to have.
So much fun.
We have David Cook, we have Michelle Ugenti Rita, and there's been discussion. In the case of David Cook, we are going to see an ethics investigation.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Senator Ugenti Rita, at this point, doesn't feel like that could change. as you mentioned before we started, this has been sort of a pattern now at the legislature, hasn't it?
This is definitely a pattern. Every year we have a couple of cases where we have legislators behaving badly, and they don't take action to rein themselves in. You know, for years we've been hearing that they need to get rid of legislative immunity. Even the governor proposed it, and they said, nah, we don't need to get rid of that. You know, let's just continue to let our legislators use it to get out of speeding tickets, drunken driving tickets, domestic violence on the side of the freeway. We don't really need to get rid of it. And it's the same thing right now with conflict of interest. They need a much more robust conflict of interest policy, and they have punted on that year after year after year. If this doesn't get them to that, then I think it's quite clear the only way they're going to get there is if voters push them there, either by pushing them out of office or by going to the ballot through the initiative process and creating a stronger conflict of interest there.
What does this raise in terms of questions, though, about the sort of lobbyist-lawmaker relationship, both of these cases, right? Because they're, I mean, you have to have a relationship with lawmakers as a lobbyist, right? That's your currency. So where do you sort of draw the line? Should there be more clear boundaries?
Yeah, I think I've had 30 years down there, and it's always been thus. When I got there, I learned about the previous 30 years from people that had served, and it's always been thus. Mm. This is not a new phenomenon. People have behaved badly over time. It's 90 people out of the phone book, remember. It's 60 in the House, 30 in the Senate, out of the phone book, random. I mean, they're all self-selected, but some of them are great people. Some of them are not people you'd let babysit your dog. So it's one of those, like, okay. As long as contextualized, you say, it's not just some weird newness. This has always been going on. People sometimes drink too much. People sometimes too close to the very people who are asking something from them. I wish it wasn't that way. I like where Julie's going with this. I just don't think it would change anything. If you had some sort of a clearer rule in the rule book,
right,
would it change people's character? No. It's the nature of human beings to be down there. You give some of them a little power, and it ends up being really bad.
I don't think it changes character, but it certainly makes it more clear whether or not they've violated an ethics law or conflict of interest. And we see this not even just with the relationships between legislators and lobbyists, which likely that needs to be addressed, but we're also seeing it even with the conflict of interest of legislators voting on things that they have what appears to be a clear conflict of interest, such as, you know, Farnsworth voting on not just voting but crafting legislation that benefits him in an abundant millions of dollars of way by enriching his charter school operation. So there clearly need to be stronger conflict of interest policies. I don't think that that's in question. I also don't think that you can count on the legislature to create them.
And our friend Howie Fisher wrote today about David Gowan, who wants to make it harder to recall lawmakers. And again, that's sort of, what do we say, the fox guarding the hen house kind of thing? I mean, is that even, do we actually need this legislation?
Yeah, I don't think it's going anywhere, but it costs him nothing to introduce a bill.
And does it get him goodwill with fellow lawmakers?
Some.
Julie, what do you think about that?
That's kind of scary. I mean, one of the reasons that Arizona didn't become a state for as long as it didn't become a state was because we wanted that ability for direct democracy. We wanted that ability to be able to recall our lawmakers when they were misbehaving. And so for lawmakers to want to get rid of that, I think just kind of they don't even understand the history of our own state. And that's pretty sad.
What about this first bill that Ducey signed into session, right? This was the ballot bill speeding up the vote counting process. Any reaction there?
It's kind of amazing. Evidently, there was just a uniformity of desire because there's no other bill anywhere near the governor's desk. But they just ran that one through the process slick. So, it's an important statement and symbolically important, and maybe it'll have effect in the real world, I hope.
Do we need that, Julie?
I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that there was any question that there was a fairness issue, I guess. You know, we were counting the ballots. I know that it takes Arizona a lot longer than other states, but we do want to make sure that we're counting every available ballot that's legitimate. So I sometimes think that it's hard in this world when we want instant results to have the patience for that. We're seeing that in Iowa. But at the same time, I'd rather have things be right than be rushed.
Julie, let's wrap up. Last minute or so. I'll start with you on this one. Michael Bloomberg spending a lot of money in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona's moved the primary up, could have an impact this time around. What sort of impact do you see Bloomberg having? Because there are folks like Stan who will say, you nominate Sanders, you nominate Warren, Democrats have no chance in Arizona. What about someone like Bloomberg?
It's interesting because I didn't give him as much of a chance even a month ago. But voters are really, man, they still have not landed on who they want. And so there's the battle among progressives between Warren and Sanders. But the rest of Democrats, I think, are still trying to figure out, do they want Biden? Do they want Buttigieg? Do they want somebody else? And right now, Bloomberg seems to be the somebody else that they might land on. I still, at the end of the day, don't think that he's going to be the candidate, but he's definitely not out of the race. And I think we could be seeing a number of months before we know who that candidate is.
And Sam, briefly, the fact that President Trump's already given him a nickname means that maybe he's threatened by him. I don't know.
It shows he's arrived a little bit, right? You can't spend $180 million and not have arrived somewhere. I mean, keep in mind, that's far more than George Bush spent to win the presidency.
But really briefly, is Bloomberg the type of Democrat who could win Arizona?
No, I don't think so. And I shouldn't say that. Yes, he could if he were actually, but the Democratic Party seems to be headstrong and going off the left edge of the earth, and Bloomberg's not there. So the progressive wing is running the rest of the party.
Well,
I don't think the progressive wing is running the rest of the party. I think that there, you know, are divides in the Democratic Party, much like there used to be in the Republican Party when it was a party and not Donald Trump's party. But they're just trying to figure that out. Do we go a little bit more left, or do we go more to the center? That's it.
Julie Earfley of Earfley on Cuff, Stan Barnes, Copper State Consulting. Guys, thanks.
Thanks.